Eat Drink Indiana Radio is powered by EatDrinkIndy.com, where Central Indiana turns to learn about food from farm to fork and drink from grains to glass.
Welcome to Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD to the Point. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. This week on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, we are focusing on shopping local and are bringing you some locally made food and drink gift ideas. We'll hear from Jason Warfel of Books and Brews, Corey Quinn of Goose the Market, Krista Miller-Deese of Wilkes and Wilson, John Wood of Be Happy Peanut Butter, David Burcham of Artisano's Oils and Spices, and Jennifer Cheesem of Pierogi in a Pinch. So stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Craft beer continues to grow in popularity in Indiana, but not every brewer has big growth as part of the plan. Books and Brews, for example, is among Indiana's smallest breweries, but owner and brewer Jason Warfel, an English major in college, has big goals of building a business that nurtures creative endeavors as well.
It was a long time in the making. You know, it started out, I tell people all the time, they don't believe me, but the bookstore idea is really what started it out, because my wife and I are both English majors, so that's where we began. And, you know, that kind of got curtailed quickly because 2008-ish, you know, and the market collapsed and the rise of the ebook, and a lot of people are moving towards, you know, the electronic age with bookstores, and it's not really a viable business market, unfortunately, anymore. So we really shelved that idea and kind of thought it would be kind of an indefinite shelving of the idea. Years went by, and I met some friends who were in the package industry and fine wines and spirits. And so one of my friends who's, you know, kind of in tune with the industry said, hey, you need to check out this bar that's out in Hudson, New York. It's called the Spy Dog Books and Ale. And it's a bookstore that I don't know 100% of their story, but I know that somewhere along the lines they added a bar to their bookstore. And I became obsessed with this place, like started cyber stalking them, and the owner was super nice. I just emailed a few times back and forth with them, and they were really nice to give me the time of day. You know, you don't even know if people will, you know, pay attention to you when you kind of just randomly approach them on the internet. So they were really nice about sharing information, and this was the time when, you know, craft beer had been taking off for years, but really in the last 5-6 years just exploding, and I think coinciding with the arts movement and shop local and trying to keep the money in community kind of coming back down from the Walmart, getting everything as cheap as possible, whereas we need to invest more in the local. And so all those things combined into one, like, really excited me. So I started to alter the business plan, like, wouldn't it be great if we did this craft bar, local food, plus bookstore, and then on top of that, used books. And so that was the business idea for a long time. And kind of in the meantime, I had a daughter, and I became a stay-at-home dad for a while. It was one of those Christmases in there where relatives were like, what do we get you for Christmas? And I was like, I'll try out a homebrew kit, you know, give that a shot. So I started brewing at home, and I think everyone who's in the homebrewing can relate to it escalates quickly. And I'm a hobbyist by heart anyway, so most hobbies for me escalate quickly, but homebrewing really did. Before you knew it, I had like 4 draft handles in my my wife probably rolling her eyes if she listens. Beer all over, you know, spilled all over the place in every corner of our house for a long time. Then when we got to the point where I started to get the itch to get back into the business, because I do come from an entrepreneurial family and always kind of had it in my blood to be into business, it just felt like the perfect opportunity to combine everything that I was into, which is a lot. I'm into a lot of different things. So, but it was all of it together was really important to me. I didn't want to be defined by the books or the beer or even the events. I really wanted to promote the arts. I wanted to bring people together. I wanted to have socially based activities and events and have everything be an experience and not have any one thing that really, you know, like I said, defined our business here. So that's a very long-winded version of how things came together eventually at the end.
Now tell me what time frame it was. So when did you, you know, kind of coalesce the idea, and when did it take shape?
Sure. Well, when I was thinking bookstore, I mean, this was years and years ago. I mean, you know, while I was in college. So you're talking like 1999, 2000. And then, you know, 8, 9 years later is when I thought, okay, let's start to think about being a bar. And it really wasn't until, I would say, 2012 when I started getting serious about being the brewery bar, everything, and kind of teetering on the edge of, am I going to regret this if I don't go for it or not? I mean, I think that's really the main question every entrepreneur needs to ask themselves is, if I don't do this, am I going to be 15, 20 years down the road and be like, yeah, I really regret it? And I'm just, I don't like to do things, and I usually you know, go all out when I go for something anyway. So I was like, you know, I'm just going to go for it and do it. And I got lucky because an acquaintance of mine, who was kind of random, was working at Cutter's, and they were selling some used equipment. So it was kind of like right time, right spot. I could get some, you know, equipment that was, the price was right. And, you know, things kind of just fell in after that. So I started looking for spaces in March of, I guess that would have been, what year is this? I guess that would have been 2013. And I just started looking. I didn't sign a lease until November, and I didn't get open until March. So, I mean, it was a full year from the time I really got serious about looking for spaces before I was able to get open.
Wow. So it's been about a year then since you, you know, started, you know, really finding a space and settling down and into what it was going to turn into, right?
Yeah, it took, like I said, it took me a full year. I mean, because I had to go through a lot of different spaces. There's some zoning issues, you know, which cost some money to get some variances, and that's not a big deal for, you know, some people to have more of a, you know, partnership group or whatever. But this is sole proprietorship, and this is, you know, everything. I did everything here from building the furniture myself. I was brewing the beer. 100% of the beer was brewed, you know, not as an assistant brewer, but I was doing it all myself to begin with. So it took a long time to kind of find the right spot, find the right equipment, find, you know, where everything is going to fit. So, yeah, we're about 8 months into business now. So, you know, we're finding our footing. We've expanded next door. And things happen fast since we've opened. Yeah, I mean, it's been happening fast the whole time, but especially since we opened, yeah.
Now, how did you fund it? Was this a Kickstarter thing?
Yeah, a lot of it was privately financed just by myself. But the Kickstarter, I was able to really stretch the dollars with the furniture especially. Because that was mainly, I did a Kickstarter. Once I kind of found the space and I knew that, okay, this is going to be it, time to launch a Kickstarter, I was looking for $15,000 and I ended up raising $17,000, which was great. And, you know, a good portion of that money goes towards the rewards that you give people for backings. But of kind of what was left, I was able to invest essentially in the wood. So essentially all the wood that went into building the furniture and a lot of the paint and the stain and some of the equipment, you know, saws and stuff like that I needed, it was all paid for through Kickstarter, which was absolutely a godsend in the end. It was one of those things that made life a lot easier in the beginning. And then I think, like anyone who's been in business, when things are delayed and things always cost more when you start, you know, the things you don't see that are specific to your space, that the health department, the fire department, the billing department, they all start adding up, and you're like, oh my gosh, if I wouldn't have had that Kickstarter, yeah, it definitely was really vital to me opening the doors here.
We've been talking with Jason Werfel of Books and Brews in Indianapolis. Stay with us here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio for more on the beers at Books and Brews, including the Dark and Stormy Stout, later in the show. When it comes to finding cool food gifts, a go-to spot is definitely Goose the Market. The meat and cheese market, specialty food shop, and wine and beer cellar at 25th and Delaware Streets in Indianapolis. A walk through the upstairs market or the downstairs in Ateca will yield plenty of ideas, but I stopped in recently and talked with the Goose's Corey Quinn about what's new.
You have to tell me about the Bacon of the Month Club first.
Maybe my favorite of all of our Of the Month Clubs. I'm really excited this year because we have some brand new Bacon Club t-shirts. These are a totally new design. They're only available to folks in the Bacon Club, so you got to be in the club to get a t-shirt. But then you also have 4 months of specially made bacon to look forward to. Every month, it's a different type of bacon, a different flavor profile, a different breed of hog, and then a different smoke, different cure that we put on it. Every month, we do a recipe recipe just for that particular month's bacon. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, it could fall anywhere in the day, like bacon should. And then a part of your Bacon Club membership goes to Heifer International. It's an international organization that raises or helps folks raise animals who need a leg up, who need some assistance. So whether it's right down the road or on the other side of the world, rather than giving a man a fish, they teach a man to fish. And so we purchase some shares on behalf of Bacon of the Month Club members to kind of spread the love, spread the pork candy, as we say there.
Well, that's very nice. A good thing, you know, at the holiday season especially. So beyond the Bacon of the Month Club, what other kind of clubs do you have? Are there others?
Mm-hmm. There sure are. Absolutely. Too many good things. That's true. We also have a Wine of the Month Club, and there's two different types of memberships. Folks can either have a straight-up membership where they get a bottle of red and a bottle of white every month, along with tasting notes, history of the winery, how it was made, why it's special and unique. They get a recipe that we made just to pair with those particular bottles. And if folks do come into the shop just to purchase those bottles off the shelf, they'll find them several dollars more expensive than if they were members of the club. So there's a financial benefit in there as well. They can also be a mystery wine club membership, which is the same bottle of red, the same bottle of white, and then a bottle of something alcoholic that we really like. It's often wine, but we'll also do sake, sparklers, beer, all across the board, cocktail mixers, some really fun local stuff in there too. It's a great gift idea, especially for folks who are looking for something that they can enjoy even past the holidays. You can buy a 3 or a 6 month membership in the wine club, and then you'll know that those folks have something to look forward to, you know, throughout the year.
Well, that's very nice. That'd be kind of perk up your February or March, wouldn't it?
And we need it in Indiana, don't we? It's true.
So beyond the clubs, which I think sound like a very cool present, you know, I'm all about consumable presents. So what other kinds of things can you find here? I mean, I'm looking around and I just see all sorts of things that would be on my Christmas list, you know. So what kind of stuff can people find?
It's true. We're sitting here in the Enoteca where we're literally surrounded by all of the products that folks can take home with them, too. It's our very strategic marketing plan, product placement that we have here as well. Everything from artisan products that are literally made just down the road, even some folks producing right here in Fall Creek neighborhood, to things coming from the other side of the world. Again, folks who are handcrafting with the same kind of care that those folks in the neighborhood are doing, too. And whether you're into spicy, salty, sweet, we can cover any palate predilection, I guess, that you might like. Just kind of looking around us here, too, we could do dinner in a basket, some imported Italian pasta, a locally made tomato preserves, tomato sauce. Then you grab some Parmigiano Reggiano or one of the Italian firm cheeses from the case upstairs, and have I got a bottle of wine to pair with this. It's perfect.
I have heard about your cutting boards, the long cutting boards. So tell me about those.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we definitely are believers in the idea that you eat with your eyes first. So presentation is just as important as the substance, as the food that you're putting in your mouth. So when we make our tours, our selections of cheese and charcuterie, nuts, olives, chutneys, and bread, we pay a lot of attention to the presentation of that tour as well. We're fortunate to get to work with Chris Cottingham. He's a wooden expert, I guess I would say. He really knows his woods, and he's got a couple of connections in town so that he can go in and harvest trees that may have been felled because of construction or development. So those trees really get a second life when he takes them into his urban sawmill and then mills them down into these absolutely gorgeous boards. Everyone is labeled with a particular type of wood that it's made from. They're all handmade, and every single one is different from another. They're a bit like a snowflake. So folks can purchase those beautiful boards and take them as a great host gift, especially if it's for a party, let us know, and we can make that tour, that selection of cheese and charcuterie, nuts, olives, and baguettes right on the board. So you can literally take this beautiful presentation to the party and then just leave the board as a great hostess gift for folks, too.
But then there's also the wine and beer. So tell me a little bit about that, too.
Oh, absolutely. This is one of our favorite times of year in the cellar, in the shop. It's the best storm cellar in the entire city, that's for sure. All of our wines and our beers, we really choose to pair pair with the food that we have upstairs and down here in the cellar. So just as our meat case is changing to those roasts and the braises, those beautiful big pieces of meat and those rich kind of stingy cheeses, we're looking for bottles to pair with those as well. So everything from a half bottle of 10-year Tawny Port that's been hand stenciled at the winery through to an amazing Beaujolais that's absolutely made for our city smoked ham. We have everything in between. And then from our beer selection, of course, always changing. Literally every time we come down, you'll find some different bottles. But for folks who are really connoisseurs, you might think about our Beer and Cheese of the Month Club, another really fun of the month club that we enjoy. Again, we pick out a particular beer and a particular farmstead cheese specifically to go with one another. We collaborate with Hoosier Beer Geek, the local beer blog, to work on that one too.
Now, speaking of cheese, I spotted the most coolest looking cheese thing upstairs in the case. So tell me about the little goat cheese balls. They were darling.
Aren't they beautiful? They look like a tray of little jewels sitting in the case, don't they? It's a small gold tray, and there's about 20 sort of dime size fresh French goat cheese balls on there. Each row of five is spiced and herbed with a different color and, of course, a different flavor. Everything from rose hips to there's also, I think, herbs of Provence, a little bit of mustard, some black peppercorns on there too. It's striking to the eye, but absolutely delicious to the palate. Maybe grab one of those trays, a fresh baguette that's delivered every day from Amelia's, and perfect gift for the holiday.
We've been talking holiday food gifts with Corey Quinn of Goose the Market. For more information, go to goosethemarket.com. So we are focusing on shopping local today and talking with some of Indy's cool local food and drink folks who make some great stuff that would be perfect for the holidays, like Wilkes & Wilson's line of syrups and elixirs. Now, that busy company has even more products available now, including their new ready-to-drink Bloody Marys. But I talked with Krista Miller-Deese a while back for a rundown on some of Wilkes & Wilson's giftable creations.
We certainly enjoy coming up with products for Wilkes & Wilson, and we do have a lot of really exciting things going on. First of all, we just launched our Bloody Mary line, which has been a huge hit. We are actually on our second reorder, and it's been out for less than a month. So it's pretty exciting. Not only are we doing a lot of different creative drinks with it, but we're also coming up with a lot of culinary recipes for that. So keep an eye out on our website for that. Also, we have our new bitters line being launched. We have an orange bitters, a Storyville bitters, which is our coffee, chicory, pecan. We also have an aromatic bitters called our Riggs Tavern. And we're also teaming up with Tanqueray Gin, and we're going to be doing a bitters for them coming up in February.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
So now, are these bitters available already? Can people find them?
Yes, they're being used throughout restaurants in the city, and you can also find them at Marsh Supermarkets. We're in two locations right now and soon to be coming to probably about 15 locations within the next couple of months. And then Big Red Liquors is coming on board. They will be carrying the bitters line as well, along with our Bloody Mary line and our elixirs. But we also have another really exciting product going out. We have a new line that we're doing private label for Cooper's Hawk Winery, which is going to be in all the Cooper's Hawk wineries, all 20 of them, in their retail, and they're going to be used in the bar location.
Oh, so people could go in there and actually purchase them, right? So now, are these syrups, elixirs that are going to be available?
These are the elixirs that are going to be available. We have three specific flavors for them. We have their Peach Bellini, which is absolutely delicious with the Prosecco and the Blanc de Blanc that Cooper's Hawk has. We have a pomegranate that's coming out, which is an amazing sweet yet tart flavor. And then we have a spiced apple, which makes an incredible red wine sangria or a winter sangria. Oh my God. And again, these are all the elixirs. They're going to be in the small 375 milliliter bottles, and they will be for a purchase at all Cooper's Hawk.
Now, how do you go about creating something like that? And tell me a little bit, Chris, about what you do as well as far as in Wilkes & Wilson. People might not be familiar with your role in the company.
Sure. I call myself the ampersand in the Wilkes and Wilson. Somebody has to keep these creative geniuses going and on the right track. Zach, of course, is an excellent bartender, and he comes up with these phenomenal recipes for cocktails. Greg is the mad scientist in the kitchen, and he comes up with some amazing concoctions like our hibiscus lime we're doing testing on, tangerine vanilla. We have some really cool flavors that we're working on right now, hopefully to launch in the spring. And I kind of help guide the guys, and I'm also in charge of sales and sales growth, working with the distributors, getting them out into the market, talking about our products out in the market, doing tastings, and really bringing the Wilkes & Wilson brand to the forefront of people's minds when they think about craft cocktails.
So then you are the person to ask, how does this happen? How do you start working with Tanqueray or Cooper's Hawk or something like that?
Well, the Tanqueray, our distributor, has made that relationship happen, which we're very happy to be partnered with Southern Wine Spirits. As far as the Cooper's Hawk, that was a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. My mom always told me, Krista, you need to get into Cooper's Hawk. Your product would sell crazy in Cooper's Hawk. And I said, Mom, I'm trying. Well, my mom passed away a year and a half ago. And so when this finally came to fruition, she was already gone. And I got that phone call from Cooper's Hawk saying, you know, we're going to be bringing you in. These are the three flavors. We want to do private label. We want a long-term relationship with you. We see this really growing. We're going to be using it in the bar side come in February and in the culinary side as well. And as soon as I had that phone message and that phone conversation with Cooper's Hawk, I just looked up to the heavens and said, thank you, Mom. We're in. We're in. This is for you, Mom. So Cooper's Hawk has really been a labor of love for our team, and I'm just so happy that's come to fruition, and it's going to be a very, very wonderful partnership with them.
Well, now, the elixirs all sound wonderful. They taste terrific. And but now, also tell me about the Bloody Mary mix, because that has become something big, right?
We are going to actually end up most likely being a Bloody Mary company that makes elixirs on the side, along with bitters. It's crazy how this has really come about. Greg and Zach were in the kitchen, and we had this crazy idea, you know, hey, somebody's asked us to do a Bloody Mary, you know, mix for them, and they wanted a private label. So we're like, sure, let's try it. We came up with a mix probably about a year ago, and we've been kind of sitting on it, shopping it around, really honing in on it. Greg and Zach got it right in the second try. You know, we tried other versions, but number two was amazing. So we finally were able to get a lot of interest generated through some of the shows that we've been working with Southern, our distributor. And we went to production, and within a month, we're already on our second reorder, and it's just been wildly successful, so much so that we're going to end up most likely being a Bloody Mary company that happens to make elixirs and bitters on the side.
Well, now, tell people where we can find the Bloody Mary mix, as well as some of the elixirs, and kind of the price point.
Sure. The Bloody Mary mix, we're retailing at $9.99, and you could find that at Marsh Supermarkets over at Lockerbie downtown, and then also at the one at 106 in Michigan Road. Big Red Liquors will be carrying it here shortly, and you could always find it at Hotel Tango, Artisan Distillery down in Fletcher Place, and then Bear Wallow carries it. But we also have a lot of retailers. Crown Liquors carries it, and they've been an amazing partner. Payless Liquors has it, and you can find it there for $9.99 as well, along with a lot of our elixirs.
Now, how many elixirs are now currently out in the marketplace?
We have 8 of our core elixirs. We have our gomme, grenadine, ginger, raspberry, orgeat. We have our pineapple and our tonic. And our lime mint. Did I mention lime mint? We have an amazing assortment, and it pretty much whatever drink you need to make, we have the craft elixir to make it for you.
We've been talking with Krista Miller-Deese of Wilkes & Wilson. You can find out more about the Wilkes & Wilson line of elixirs, bitters, and their Bloody Mary mix at wilksandwilson.com. Well, in my opinion, consumable presents are definitely the way to go for holiday gifts, and a sampler of local beers sounds especially appealing. And when the names of the brews play up literary references like, oh, say, a dark and stormy stout, or an ale of two cities, or cream and punishment, well, then it's even more fun. At Books and Brews, a small brewery and used bookstore at 96th Street and I-69, owner and brewer Jason Werfel is having fun brewing beer, selling books, and creating community all in the same place.
So now tell me about the beer and then about the book side.
Yeah, so the books, to start with the books, so when you walk in, that's the first thing you see. So the bookstore is used books, and initially we were going to do kind of a buy-sell trade thing, but we kind of did away with that because unfortunately it is kind of a small part of the business right now. And the hope is as we grow, we can kind of focus more on the books and kind of bring it back up because the beer has been driving the business. But so the books right now, we're just taking on donations from customers and then we're reselling them. Across the board, $2 for mass, $3 for trade, and $5 for hardcover. So that really gives us our identity, even though it's not a big part of the business. It's still super important to me because it kind of symbolizes the arts that we're all about, reading, writing, creating. We give 10% of that money, too, back to Indie Reads. It's a kind of our way of, I think everyone's got to kind of latch onto our cause, and I think literacy especially being, it's kind of natural for us to be important. So we give 10% of that money back, and kind of the books obviously provide our identity because going into the tap room in the back, all of our beer, all of our food, it's all some sort of play on words or named after a character, a book, or some sort of theme or writer, author. So, yeah, and then the beer, our big thing with the beer, again, playing off the creative angle and also off of the fact that we're, I can't verify for certain, but I certainly know that we're one of the smallest, if not the smallest, brewery in the state. We're just brewing barely 2.5 barrels or 80 gallons per batch. So because we have that, one of the benefits we have over the big breweries is a little bit smaller risk when it comes to experimenting. So we take that into account. We do a new beer every single Friday. And then we'll even, on top of that new beer, we'll take a few gallons off. We call it 5-gallon Friday. We'll experiment with that 5 gallons. So, for instance, we're doing a Christmas ale or holiday ale, you call it, this Friday, the Ghost of Christmas Ale. So our 5-gallon Friday, we're adding cherry to that. So I have a cherry concentrate from Orchard in Michigan that I'm going to do on the side. So usually that 5 gallons is gone by Monday. It goes pretty fast. And then that batch will last for a week or two. That's pretty typical for us. We go through batches in about a week or two. But, yeah, we have 10 of our own on CO2. We have 3 on nitro. And then now we're doing 22-ounce bottles that we have around town, too. Yeah.
It's really growing.
Yeah. Like I said, I didn't have any plans to wholesale at all when I first started. But I started going to festivals, and people asked for the, you know, and the first rule of business, of course, is to follow the money. And if the beer's been really driving us and really humbled by the support of it, like I said, you know, we really want it to be about the experience. Obviously, people want the beer, and we're going to try to get it to them. So that's kind of really pushed our expansion next door, too. We've expanded next door mainly so we can have more room for just packing away more kegs and bottling. We're still bottling everything by hand, and we have really no intentions of getting any sort of line or anything. That's not really kind of what we're about. I think I'd do a second location before I would ever invest in gigantic tanks or anything like that. I like the idea that people can come in here and know that it's just this small business, it's a guy that wanted to do something cool. And maybe inspire them to create on their own, whether it's helping them write their next novel or open their own business. So anyway, yeah, the beer has grown very fast, and now we're in Party Pack, and we're in Vine and Table, and we're in Cons and 21st Amendment, and also Goose the Market.
Now, tell me what beers are out there available. Tell me, you know, some of the interesting names.
Yeah, sure. So we have 12 beers right now. It's really hard for me to narrow them down because, again, that's just kind of how I am. I'm sure if you talk to anyone who works here, they'll tell you the same thing, or any of my regulars. It's got to look. So I have 12 beers right now, and most all of them are out in just about all those places I named. So, for instance, one of the really popular ones, we have a Belgian Golden Strong. It's called King Lear's Fool. I was always enamored by the Fool character in King Lear, who has like 2 lines. And That's 11%. That's on shelves pretty much everywhere. It's one of our popular ones. We do. It was a dark and stormy stout. We do a regular version and a smoked version. That's our Imperial Stout, which is actually named by a trivia winner. One of the things we do, you know, as a part of everything, we really want everyone to feel like a part of the business. So we try to involve our customers as much as we can into the content of this place. If you win trivia on Wednesday, you get your choice. You get a $20 gift card, or you get to name a beer. So a lot of people take advantage of that. So we have 3, 4, 5 different beers most of the time that are trivia winner named. So those are two examples. And then more on the sessionable side, the smaller beers in the 5-6% range, we have stuff like my Shogun Soba Ale, which is an amber ale I use buckwheat in, which is a popular kind of flagship beer for us. And then I do Old Bitter Miss Havisham, which is an extra special bitter. Of course, Great Expectations. I guess we have several Dickens references. I didn't realize it until now. And we also do Toil and Trouble. Of course, Shakespeare's Macbeth is my favorite Shakespeare play, but Toil and Trouble is our Northern English Brown. We also have my Clifford the Big Red Ale, which is Irish style red. And it's kind of everything in between.
We've been talking with Jason Werfel of Books and Brews in Indianapolis. For more information on the brewery, go to booksinbrews.com. All for food-related presents, but peanut butter as a gift idea? Well, when you've got flavors like white chocolate and pretzels, dark chocolate, coconut, and almonds, or milk chocolate and toffee, then peanut butter moves out of the sack lunch category and you start to see its present potential. That's what Zionsville residents John and Kathy Weed and their three children, Julia, Jackson, and Sawyer, have discovered with their company, Be Happy Peanut Butter. What began with small batches sold at a farmer's market booth has become a line of spreads that, as the jars say, you eat with a spoon, and that are now sold in shops around Indianapolis.
Tell me how it started, if it just, you know, it was this, you know, just an idea that grew and grew, or is this all planned, or, you know, how did it happen?
Amazingly not planned. About a year and a half ago, we started making peanut butter in our kitchen. We've tried peanut butters from all over the place, and so we just wanted to see if we could make it ourselves. And so we started doing it at home, giving it to friends, giving it to family, and then a friend of ours, Inga, who has Inga's Popcorn Store in Main Street, said that she was opening a new store and was going to have a commercial kitchen and asked if we wanted to make it there and sell it there. And so we said, okay, we'll do that. And we signed up for the Zionsville Farmers Market in 2013. And we signed up for just every other week. We didn't even want to commit to every week. So we did that. And then Goose the Market found our peanut butter. And so they started carrying it. And then it just kind of snowballed from there. Other stores started finding out about it, mainly through Goose. And then we had articles written about us. And it just kind of built really organically on itself. And so here it is a year and a half later, and we're in about 18 different stores, and we ship all over the country. It's always amazing to find, to see the orders that come in, and we ship Georgia, Texas, Connecticut, Colorado, California.
That must be, you know, kind of interesting and exciting and gratifying, but maybe puzzling.
Hey, I really do think the product's different. It's really unlike peanut butter. Our saying is eat it with a spoon, and it really is the kind of thing that you can just open a jar of and take a spoon and, you know, have a bite before you go to bed, or, you know, instead of a snack at lunch or something like that. So it's really different, and I think that's kind of connected with people. And I think the story of, you know, the family and starting it as a family business, and that's also resonated well. And I think people like kind of that entrepreneurial story. But no, it was not. There wasn't some 5-year plan that we had. It was, you know, we have got about a 5-minute plan. You know, what's happening, you know, tomorrow.
Well, tell me a little bit about the family business part of it and how that started.
Yeah, so I've just always, my mom always had a little business, and I've just always thought it would be a great way to kind of teach kids about running a business. And so they help. I mean, it is not, I mean, they're jarring, you know, 2 and 3 days a week, and we do a quarterly family meeting where I show them all the numbers and, you know, teach them about, you know, the costs and fixed costs and all just kinds of inventory and just kind of different business ideas. And that part I really enjoy, and I think they ask a lot of questions. So that part of it is really neat.
So it's a big lesson in addition to a business and a production facility and that sort of thing.
Right. Yeah, and they get to see the good and the bad. You know, they get to see the good of things like this and, you know, sales and, you know, friends of theirs that say, oh, my gosh, you know, we love your peanut butter. Or they'll go to a friend's house and their friends will have it in their, you know, cabinet, and that's great, you know, and then they see the hard work that it takes to make it, and getting this commercial kitchen. We ran into some, you know, headaches as far as the number of sinks we had to put in and the approvals we had to get through the state and all that. So they've gotten to see, you know, both the good and the frustration of having a business.
Well, now, what is the best part of all this? Is it the, you know, the family enterprise, or you know, what do you like best about it, and do you intend to keep going with making peanut butter?
Yeah, I think the part that I've enjoyed the most is just kind of getting to know the community. We've got great store partners, you know, all the different places, and it's got it on our website, but all of our businesses that carry it, I've really enjoyed getting to know the owners and, you know, seeing how hard they work and keeping their stores running and what it takes to be a business owner. So those relationships have been something that I really didn't expect that I'd enjoy that much, but it's been really fun to see other small businesses and hear about how they, you know, started and see what they're doing. So that's been great. And then and just making something that people like. I mean, it's fun to get the feedback through Facebook or our website or emails of people just loving the peanut butter, and that's really gratifying.
Had you been in any sort of food related business before, or did this just kind of come about like that, you know,
no.
Because you thought about making some peanut butter?
No, zero experience in this field. We've learned a lot. So it's been trial and error, and we've tried some things with flavors that haven't worked. And, you know, we've the big thing was just finding the right ingredients and trying. We've ordered peanuts from all over the country from every different website until we really found the ones that work best. And I think that's really made a difference in being pretty choosy about the ingredients that we put into it.
Now, what are some of the flavors that you've tried and that maybe didn't work?
Yeah, we really wanted to do like a salted caramel chocolate one. And there was something about the caramel that just, it screwed up the texture of the peanut butter. So it just didn't work really well. Everyone wanted us to do like a pumpkin flavor in this fall, and we tried a few different things, and I just couldn't find something that I was really happy with, so we ended up not doing that. We've got some ideas for flavors, you know, for next year, but for right now, you know, the 7 flavors that we have are just keeping us busy enough.
Now, how did those come about?
A lot of it was just, you know, we wanted to put things in there that we liked, you know, chocolate and toffee and white chocolate and pretzel and cranberries and dark chocolate and white chocolate. And we've got one that's snickerdoodle, and it's Inga Smith snickerdoodle popcorn, okay. Just mixed in with our plain. And honestly, I had that idea, and I had suggested it to my wife, Kathy, and she didn't think it was going to be a good idea. And I went ahead and did it anyway. And it turned out really cool, and the popcorn keeps its texture, and so there are some things that we've tried that we weren't sure about that have turned out well.
Now, are there ones that do better than others? So do you have like the best seller?
Yeah, probably our best seller is our Dream Big, which is white chocolate and pretzel, and there's something about the crunchy of the pretzel and the sweet and salty combination of the pretzel and the chocolate. So that's probably our best seller. And then our Go Lucky, which is our chocolate, toffee, Rice Krispies. You know, that's kind of like a candy bar in a jar. But our Trail Mix was the very first one we made. And we've got a new one, coconut, almonds, dark chocolate, that if you love coconut, it's great. So, yeah, it's they all do fairly well.
Now, how'd you name them?
You know, my wife would tell you that my motto in life is kind of be happy, and that is, you know, just I wanted it to be a really positive experience, and just kind of a positive feeling both for the family and for the people that ate it. I mean, it really is one of those things that you eat it, and if you love it, you know, it really does make you happy. And so the names, the Dream Big and Go Lucky, I mean, just – things that I came up with. I can't tell you exactly how they all came about, but they're just they seem to go with the overall feel of Be Happy.
We've been talking with John Wood of Be Happy Peanut Butter. You can find more information on the company and all their latest varieties at BeHappyPeanutButter.com. Got a local food gift focus today here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, and we are taking a look at some of our favorite shopping options. Artisano's Oils and Spices is a farmer's market mainstay, but you can also stop by the shop in Nora at 1250 East 86th Street. They often hold classes at the shop as well, and owner David Burcham filled us in on what you'll find.
So what we're going to do is every week we're going to have some type of event, but every month it's going to be around the third Thursday of every month we're going to do a cheese event. So we're going to pair up different cheeses. And basically, we're bringing in whole cheeses, big wheels, cut them up, do different foods with it, different wines with it, and then each person will go home with 8 ounces or 6 ounces of that cheese that night.
We're
going to do that every night or every month on a Thursday. Mm-hmm. And then we had our first one, and then we're having our second one tomorrow, coming up soon. So, and then on December, we're not going to do any in December. We're doing what are we doing in December? We're going to do a soup and stock event. So we're
going to tell me about stocks. That.
So I've got a chef coming in, and basically it's going to be a 3-hour class of how to, cut and get ready and create your stocks, and you're in creating different soups. And then at the end of the night, that's what we'll have for dinner. So we'll have those probably already going in the background. Oh. But then everybody can take it home and make their own soup then from there. Oh. And then in January, that'll be all the events we have in December because it's just holidays. Oh. So, but in January, we're going to be doing a knife skills class. And
that sounds like it'd be useful. People actually get to
absolutely, yeah.
Cut?
It's going
to
be hands-on. So nice. We're actually with that. We're going to have specific, really vegetables and things that we're going to be trying. Basically, enough to create your own stock at the end of the day is kind of what it's going to be. And then we'll do on some of the classes. We'll actually include chicken to where they can debone a chicken too.
That's a challenging class.
Yes, exactly. And then take all that and make their stock from there. Yeah, we talked about the soup class we'll be doing in February. We're doing a dinner here Thursday before Valentine's Day. We're going to be doing chocolate and cheeses and wine and champagne pairings and things like that.
That sounds like a wonderful combination.
Yeah, exactly. So it'll go good. And then that Tuesday after that is Fat Tuesday. Okay. So we're going to be doing a Mardi Gras theme event here that night and having kind of New Orleans style food being cooked and playing around and showing people how to make certain aspects of that etouffee and some other things. So that'll be that.
Now, have you been wanting to do these classes but didn't have the space,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. We just didn't have the space. I mean, we would do them, but they're just little tastings up to 10 people. But now that we have the space, we're looking at holding the number to about 26. Uh-huh. Our very first event was about 20 or 31 people, and it was just a little tight for people to be able to walk around and be comfortable. So we backed it down.
Where do you do it? Right here in the
right
middle?
Right here, yeah. We clear things out, and then we just set up tables. And bring chairs in. And this time we have chairs. We're across the street. We had to do everything stand up, so people get tired. So they didn't hang out real long after the events. But here we have more room. We can do things. So, and we're going to try to do hands-on type events where we'll have some that are going to be geared more towards demonstration, but a lot of it's going to be hands-on. We have all kinds of ideas. And like when we get closer to summer, maybe how to create your own salsa and showing people how we can reduce their time to make the salsa. Because we talk about it all the time, 20 minutes to eat dinner, but 2 hours to make dinner. So how do we cut that down? But some of that's by choosing certain items or getting better with your knife skills and learning how to cut things up quicker and easier.
We've been talking with David Burcham of Artisano's Oils and Spices. For more information, go to artisanosoils.com. Love it when our local food artisans are in the spotlight. So it was great to attend an event recently with the group Successful Women Made Here that focused on local chef and food entrepreneur Jennifer Cheesem of Pierogi in a Pinch. I talked with Jennifer not long after she opened her shop in Pendleton last year to hear about how she grew her business from farmer's market to brick and mortar.
Pierogies are a Polish and Slovak delicacy that I grew up making in my family. And now here in Pendleton, downtown Pendleton, I open a shop where I can make pierogies, sell them frozen or fresh platters for dine-in or carry-out guests. Even we are doing holiday orders and special orders if anyone needs something other than for a holiday, if they're doing a dinner event or catering event. But I grew up making them, and I'm so glad with over the years doing them at farmers market since 2009 that I can have my own location and bring it to all to enjoy. So,
well, now tell me a little bit about how you did get started in the farmers markets.
Oh, okay, sure. In 2009 was my first year at the Carmel Farmers Market. I started as a personal chef, and that was what I was trying to do is marketing with my chef business. But I figured, hey, I haven't seen pierogies since I've moved from Cleveland, Ohio, in the Indianapolis region. And it was one of those things where I'm like, I know this. I can make the pierogies, and it's new for people, I'm sure, around the area. And a lot of people have come accustomed to it or was wondering what it was if they've never heard about them. But started creating them and just selling them, and ever since then, people have just been asking for more and more, at least when am I going to open my location. But it's been great. Since 2009, I've been on and off doing Carmel and Fisher's Farmers Markets.
Now, what was the reaction at first? I would imagine there were some people who were familiar with them and were happy to find them, but maybe some people weren't.
The reaction all the time was, what is a pierogi? And I was so glad to welcome the whole tradition that I grew up making them, educating people and telling them all about them. All I've heard is that anyone in the Great Lakes region is where people are more familiar with having them. And the ones that were not, I just said, well, that's what I'm here to do. I'm here to have a special product for you, specially made for the area. There are some frozen ones everyone would always tell me about. They go, I think I can find them in the grocery store. But I said, it's really rare, and that's usually the chain brand. But this is an opportunity to make something fresh and local for Indiana to enjoy.
Okay, so tell us exactly what is a pierogi.
Okay, a pierogi is a Polish, and I'm part Slovak, so it's a Polish Slovak dumpling that traditionally you make with fresh dough, and it has custom fillings. Normally the traditional ones are a meat, a potato, or what I grew up having was a prune one. But what I have done, I have made the traditional fillings and now have created my own gourmet, more new style age pierogies for people to kind of have tastes that they're familiar with, but also to enjoy. And a pierogi is a boiled dumpling that you saute in butter and onions and serve with sour cream. So, of course, with all of our fillings, maybe the sour cream doesn't go well with, but we're also going to look forward to featuring some sauces that will complement them, too, when we open.
Oh, now tell me first about the different types of fillings that you do have, and your menu probably changes.
Yes,
but.
Yeah, the menu will change. I'm hoping to do a new menu every month, so we're kind of going to feature five different varieties each month, and then we're going to have a dessert pierogi we're going to have each month. Probably just do one of those, but rotate that out as well. Customary, we're going to have the traditional ones on the menu. That would be sauerkraut, a meat one, and a potato. So the people that are always knocking on my door are familiar with those. And there's one that is a very traditional one, is a dry farmer's cheese. And a lot of customers have been asking, if they are familiar, where can they get those? And I will have those in the shop for people to have. But the non-traditional, I'm doing a gourmet twist with, I have a beef and onion, so people that are familiar with having Italian, they kind of go for that. I also do a Polish sausage and sauerkraut. I do a combination. I have many more listed on my website, but for what we have now, for this month, the sharp cheddar potato is a top seller. That will always be on the menu every month, as so many people do enjoy those. And then I did a twist with pepperoni pizza this month, but we will just be rotating them as the months go. I really like featuring the dessert ones, but I also look forward to featuring more of the gourmet and savory ones.
If you could compare them to something, I mean, they do seem a little similar. People might be familiar with, like, the dumplings in Chinese food or other Asian food, but they're not, you know, they're not
like dumplings like you like in the American South, the chicken and dumplings. Right. So I think it's a very interesting contrast.
I think a lot of people like to, what I usually say is if they're not familiar, that it's like the pot sticker, like you mentioned, or in Italian, like the ravioli, and more for Spanish and is more like the empanada, but the empanada is more deep fried. This is certainly a meal that you could deep fry, but it's traditional to just be sauteed and boiled. So, but we try to kind of give people visual comparison because it's what they're used to when they go out to a restaurant or they see in their grocery store. So they know, oh, okay, I've tried a ravioli, Italian ravioli, that this should be similar. Or I've had an empanada. It might not taste exactly like that because the dough is different, but at least they know what they're going to try to achieve when they're eating their meal with their family. So,
now, what's been the reaction here in Pendleton to a pierogi shop?
It's been overwhelming. I was, we found this great location in downtown Pendleton, and since we kind of took over the shop and decided to, redecorate and do it towards our branding, that, everyone was stopping by. We had our doors open, we were painting, we were meeting the locals. It's gone over fantastic here locally. So we're hoping to spread the word, spread the cheer especially about it. But here locally, it's great. I'm hiring locally. I'm meeting the local people here as well, the business owners here in downtown. So.
Now, did you always have this in mind, when you started thinking about a culinary career?
Probably wasn't exactly this. I knew when I went to the farmers markets myself, when I, when I was just looking around, I'm like, I don't see like pierogies, or, I don't hear about a Polish shop right around the corner in downtown. I was always trying to find those places when I first moved here, because Cleveland is just saturated with the Slovak Village and, the Polish places. And my biggest thing was, if there's not something that I grew up eating, I can certainly try to bring it and see if it, people do like it and people do want to taste it. And the answer was yes. So it kind of, for me, was like from one business doing personal chefing where I was cooking for families at home and, where they had their standard standard dishes they're used to having. But I always did the pierogies on the side to market both businesses, and the pierogi business won. I had to drop off the personal chefing because this is what took off.
We've been talking with Jennifer Cheesem of Pierogi in a Pinch. Her shop is located in Pendleton, Indiana. And for more information, go to pierogiinapinch.com. You've been listening to Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD To The Point. I'm your host, Jolene Katzenberger. Thank you so much for tuning in for some locally focused food and drink gift ideas this week. And thanks also to our guests, Jason Werfel of Books and Brews, Corey Quinn of Goose the Market, Krista Miller-Deese of Wilkes & Wilson, John Wood of Be Happy Peanut Butter, David Burcham of Artisanos Oils and Spices, and Jennifer Cheesem of Pierogi in a Pinch. And thanks also to producer John Katzenberger for helping to bring you Eat Drink Indiana Radio.